speak. The charm of make, charm of make, charm of make, charm.
There will come a time on the planet Earth when science and technology will be long forgotten. When wizards will rule the world.
This is the Arnomancy Podcast. Join your host, Reverend Eric, and his diverse array of amazing guests in an exploration of tarot, magic, the occult, and the history of Western esotericism. The Arnomancy Podcast exists thanks to the support of generous listeners like you. Please consider supporting this podcast for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/arnomancy. Welcome back to the show. I am here with my friend and return guest, Nicholas S. Litersky, JD, PhD. Nick is an adjunct senior lecturer in psychology at the California Institute of Integral Studies and a professional spiritual guide. They hold a doctorate in depth psychology with emphasis in Jungian and archetypal studies from Pacifica Graduate Institute, as well as a master's in spiritual guidance from Sophia University. Their research interests include depth psychological reflections on spirituality, ceremonial magic, Paleolithic cave art, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Nick's work has been published in multiple professional journals, and their book, Method Infinite, Freemasonry and the Mormon Restoration, was published in 2022. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Eric. I'm delighted to be here again. Enjoy talking with you.
I'm really excited about it, too. I love how Paleolithic cave art is just kind of thrown in there.
That was my dissertation. I was working really? With 36,000 year old images and secretly spirits. So,
so the reason that I'm having you back so soon, there's a few reasons. I mean, first of all, as I've gotten older and my guests have tended to get older as well, I've realized that like most people interested in occult stuff at all are incredibly multifaceted and have a zillion different topics that they can talk about. So we talked about Mormonism and treasure hunting last time, but you know, off camera, I realized that there was a whole other side of you that would make an equally interesting, maybe more interesting episode, and that is your work as a spiritual guide and the stuff that you do with spiritual guidance, both in teaching and in practice. And so I thought we would get into that, like, let's dive into it. So you have a couple of things that are sort of in your educational history that are interesting along this line. First of all, a doctorate in depth psychology with emphasis in Jungian and archetypal studies. So that's kind of like hardcore Jungian nerd stuff, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Like you probably have the fancy red book and think about your dreams a lot.
Exactly. I have the red book and a lot more.
I've done a little bit of Jung reading, but not for a very, very long time, and not probably, and definitely not in the sort of depth that it would take to get a PhD or a doctorate in it. Did you get the doctorate in depth psychology before you went on to get your master's in spiritual guidance?
No, it was the other way around. In fact, it was actually my master's in spiritual guidance work that introduced me to Jung and got me interested to then pursue the PhD.
Spiritual guidance, how is that related to therapy? Is it a type of therapy?
Well, if you use the word therapy very broadly, yes.
Okay.
But is it licensed therapy? Absolutely not. I am not a mental health professional. I do have training in therapeutic tools. To help me work with my clients.
Okay.
And honestly, I also have training to be able to spot red flags. You know, I'm not qualified to diagnose, but I need to be able to recognize if I have a client who is, you know, way over my depth and needs to be referred to, for example, a mental health professional.
And how does the doctorate, I know that these are really, these probably sound like real beginner questions, but I'm sort of curious as to how a doctorate in depth psychology, that's also not the same thing as getting a license to, as becoming a licensed therapist, right? Is that,
correct.
So are licensed psychologists, do they get an MD?
No, a psychiatrist gets an MD.
Okay.
A licensed therapist usually gets a master's in counseling psychology,
mm-hmm.
and then sits for state boards and
to get a
license. Yeah, okay. Much like a lawyer, okay. Except there's also, you know, certain number of supervised hours of practice and this sort of thing that goes into it. Spiritual guidance is not a therapeutic practice in that same sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll actually see people, I've seen all kinds of people. I've seen people who are like QAnon fringe simply say, I'm a spiritual guy. Spirits tell me to tell you what to do.
Oh,
which is always interesting trying to differentiate, let people know that that's not what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
What I'm doing, like I said, I have a master's degree in spiritual guidance. So I've been trained in working with clients. And it really is a matter of meeting somebody where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not an authority figure in the sense that, for example, a therapist would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's some natural hierarchy that goes on, but I'm really here to meet that person at their level and journey with them.
Uh-huh.
So what I do is really act as a reflective partner.
Interesting.
So I pay attention to what's going on, not only what my clients are saying,
uh-huh.
but even things like body language.
Hmm.
So, there are times when I have a client who's expressing some experience they've had, and I'm watching their face and their body.
Uh-huh.
And I may notice a huge amount of tension, for example, when they're talking about a particular part of their experience. Part of my job is to notice that and reflect it back to them. I noticed when you talked about the man in the suit, you really tensed up. Tell me more about that.
Huh.
So that kind of reflection helps people to deepen their experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then let's talk a little bit about why that's important. So I've kind of been going about it wrong by trying to relate it to therapy, and I need to look at this from a different angle. Like therapy is good to get, and maybe people should have therapy, but then also have spiritual guidance dealing. So it would sort of deal with a different part of their life. Is right. that more accurate? Okay.
Well, it is because I have clients who, particularly those who are involved in occult practices, who mm-hmm. do not feel like they can go to their therapist and say, hey, I had this experience with Hermes last night.
Yes, I totally would identify with that because, finding a therapist is tough enough, but finding a therapist right. who's not going to think that your average occultist is a total weirdo
right.
and should probably see a psychiatrist, that's going to be a tough call.
Yeah, the therapists in the mental health area, as a rule, tend to avoid spirituality. That's improving now, but over time, that's been the tendency. And it really goes clear back to Freud, and the conflict between Freud and Jung. Jung felt that spirituality was a vital part of the psyche that needed to be explored. And Freud was a hardcore committed atheist who felt that spirituality was complete garbage and deception. So to him, it was not worth, it was not worthy of study. That was a piece of their conflict.
Uh-huh.
That's come down to where therapists steer clear of spirituality and are frankly just not often trained well to deal with a person's spiritual journey.
You know, as a creature who owns a psyche, I find it super difficult to even conceive of separating my psychology from my spirituality. Like, how do you even do that? How that sounds impossible to me.
And I hear you on that. I really do.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I'm trained in there with a lot of therapeutic tools. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to work in those waters. At the same time, like I said, I'm not a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. I do not treat mental illnesses. In fact, I don't even really approach what I do from a standpoint of mental illnesses.
Okay.
With a Jungian standpoint, people are approached as whole.
Oh.
Foundationally whole. instead of disordered.
Well, that's pleasant. That's way more pleasant. How refreshing.
I think so. Yeah. And so that's one of the things about what I do. When somebody comes to me with experiences they're having, I have absolutely zero concern with any sort of objective reality of what they are experiencing. I have clients come to me that talk about visions they've had, for example. I don't have to care about whether there's some genuine or not genuine aspect of that. What I am concerned about is where that person finds meaning in that experience and what they take away from it. And so I'm able to help them reflect on that and think through that process.
There's an element of like reserving judgment there, or lack of judgment there, that I really find super refreshing. And it kind of reminds me of approaching topics in like the history of Western esotericism, where we'll read like accounts of visions or accounts of experiences. And, you know, the historian who's reading this will be like, you know, it's not really my place to say whether or not this was true. What my place is to do is to interpret the record of the event and know that this is how the person experienced it.
Sure.
Which I know isn't exactly the same, but it's still sort of like, I was thinking about it because of the visions thing, because that's how visions in history, you know, tend to be sort of approached non-judgmentally. It's like this, you know, it doesn't matter. We aren't going to say whether or not this mystic was hallucinating or insane. We're going to say this is what their experience was, because honestly, that's the subjective experience is all we can really rely on.
Exactly. And so that really is, you know, part of my Jungian background to approach things that way. But also, honestly, it comes out of a formative experience that I had. Because, you know, I came out of a very conservative, right-wing, controlling, Christian-based religion.
Right. And for more on that, see our last episode.
Sure. And you know, I kind of went through a period of kind of being allergic to Christianity, if you will.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine ended up going to Rome on business. And his husband just wanted to go with him and then couldn't. And so, you know, I get this call 10 days before the trip. Hey, you want to go to Rome? So I ended up going with him. And yeah, anybody who goes to Rome knows there's a church on every corner and a couple in between. So when we first arrived in the city, got checked into our hotel, went out walking, and saw this big, you know, stone staircase, huge, tall staircase, and lots of people are walking up this. So I thought, well, gosh, there must be something up there, right? And so we decided to walk up and see what the deal was. We get up there in this little plaza with a church, and we go inside. And at the altar was a reliquary, beautiful gold glass reliquary, that had these old rusty iron chains. And they were allegedly the chains that bound St. Peter when he was brought to Rome.
Wow.
And there's a little plaque there that tells the supposed history of how these chains came into the possession of the church. And the church has had them there for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
But the story they told, the historian in me snickered and said, this is complete nonsense. This story is garbage. And yet at the same time, I could not deny the feeling, the sensation of power that I felt in that experience of approaching this icon. And so what I realized is it had nothing to do with whether the story was accurate. It had to do with hundreds and thousands of people over hundreds of years pouring their own psychic energy into focused attention and adoration that made these chains holy and sacred, regardless of what their real background was. And that to me was a real eye-opener in terms of spirituality. So I don't care if somebody's supreme being is a tub of cottage cheese. I tell people that, you know, lightheartedly. What I care about is what is your experience, and where do you find meaning in that, and what steps do you take, if there are any steps to take?
Okay, that's a really interesting experience. It's interesting that you had to kind of go through, I mean, It makes sense. You know, I was raised atheist in rural Oregon. And so I, too, had to go through some really, really negative experiences with Christianity and kind of like an allergy to it before I really was able to approach it on, you know, equal terms or less hostile terms later on. The thing that's kind of interesting, the thing that I'm sort of thinking about now, I mean, first of all, I want to kind of make a joke about you not having an MD and having to, like, tell somebody that they've got food poisoning from their old cottage cheese god, and they might need to actually go to it. You don't need spiritual guidance. You need some Pepto-Bismol.
Like I said, this is where I learned the red flags and when things should be referred to experts.
Right. So there's a part of your description of this, especially sort of the thing where it's like occult practitioners are unable to really go to therapists and talk about their subjective occult experiences without getting red flagged by a therapist. Mm. But occult practitioners who are in, for instance, like liberal Catholic churches, like the AJC or something, they have an outlet in the fact that, like, you know, AJC clergy are typically pretty well versed in occult matters or esoteric spirituality, and so they can talk to them about that kind of stuff. People in I guess probably any sort of liberal church, you can probably go to a priest or somebody in the local clergy and have somebody have a conversation about this stuff. But a lot of occultists aren't part of churches, and one of the things that you sort of brought up when we were discussing this originally was kind of research on religious affiliation and participation. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and why maybe that is opening up a need for spiritual guidance?
Sure. So especially since the early 90s, there's been a huge decline in the United States in participation in organized religion. And the most recent research, just released a few weeks ago by Pew Research, showed that 48% of Americans identify as what they call religious nuns, N-O-N-E-S. Mm. People who are
not the fun kind.
Yeah, you're right. people who are not affiliated with any particular religion's tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting when you read the research, because there are some who assume these people are not spiritual. But Pew went a little further, and they found out that of those 48% of Americans, 40% of them still said they felt spiritual power in places or objects.
Whoa.
So the places might be a location in nature, for example.
Uh-huh.
Or objects might be a crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Or herbs, or, you know, various things. So what that means is we have a sizable body of people who no longer have that clergy kind of connection that you talked about,
mm-hmm.
who are really sort of out there on their own doing their exploration, usually practicing some kind of what we call spiritual bricolage,
right,
which is bringing together pieces from lots of different traditions. But they don't have somebody that they can reflect on with that.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, we all have a need to be witnessed. We all have a need to be heard. That's a deep, basic human need. But we also do need somebody to kind of check in with.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are actively trying to deepen our practice, whatever that looks like, then we need somebody that helps with us to check in and hold ourselves accountable.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so spiritual guidance is something that has changed somewhat over the years in response to this. It used to be people would go to their clergymen, and they had what was called spiritual direction. And this is largely out of the Catholic Church, but also in others. And so you would go to your priest, for example, and say, this is what's going on. And the priest would tell you what to do. You know, they'd give you spiritual direction.
Right.
Some people still use that phrase. In my training and a lot of other trainings that are out there, we've gotten away from that word. And we talk about spiritual guidance. And that term's a little nebulous for a lot of people. I've had mm-hmm. people, kind of what you mentioned earlier, I've had people hear that I'm a spiritual guide, and they think that means I'm some sort of guru. or that I'm channeling, you know, a spirit to tell them things.
Or you're like giving him ayahuasca or something. And
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not it. You know, I'm more a Sherpa on a journey who's just saying, hey, you notice there's a chasm over there. What do you think about that? You're free to step into that if you want to.
So then, I think that's a really, really important point to make and to sort of like drive home. Like, you know, you were mentioning that one of the challenges that people might have with spiritual guide is that with the title of spiritual guide or with finding a spiritual guide is that there are a lot of possible quacks or gurus or people on in, you know, sort of dangerous fringe movements who might be using that term. So how do you responsibly find a spiritual guide and know that you're getting somebody who actually has your spiritual well-being in mind?
Well, there are some resources out there. There's a group called Spiritual Directors International that does keep a directory of sorts, but they don't hold specific standards necessarily. So, you know, it in some ways is just a list of advertisements of people in your area. Uh-huh. What it really comes down to, anybody who's doing spiritual guidance work should be able to sit down with you for an introductory session. This is what I do. I do a short introductory mm-hmm. session and directly answer your questions about spiritual guidance. What is your background? What is your training? Mm-hmm. What is your approach?
Oh, so kind of like what I'm doing here.
Very much so. Yes, exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. All right. So we've heard about your training. You talked a little bit about at least the philosophy behind your approach. All right. So like, I'm going to assume, and please stop me if this assumption is wrong, that kind of as with every, profession or practice, you must have some kind of focus or some sort of like area of expertise where you work best. Like, you know, maybe you, for instance, enjoy being a spiritual guide or feel like you do a good job being a spiritual guide to like ex-Christians or ex-Mormons, mm-hmm. or you feel like you're an excellent spiritual guide to people who do like, I don't know, interpretive tarot or something of that nature. Like maybe, how do you pick your clients, or how do you know if you're going to be able to fit your client?
Well, when I have an introductory session, it's just as much me getting a feel for the client as it is the client getting a feel for me. Mm-hmm. So we have to mutually come to that comfort level. But if you're asking, you know, what areas do I sort of excel in? What kind of clients? One area is the LGBTQ community. And, mm-hmm. you know, I identify as gay. I identify as non-binary. I have a lot of clients who come out of, for example, Christian churches that were not affirming. Mm-hmm. And they experience a lot of religious wounding around that. Many of them have difficulty seeing themselves in the divine, because they've been brought up with this idea of a God who's an old white cishet man in a white robe in the sky somewhere. And, yeah, they don't see themselves in that. And so part of what I do is help them see themselves in the divine. Because of my background in Jungian and archetypal studies in particular, I'm able to expose them to other stories, other myths. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I've had transgender clients who've had that same sort of question. And I've been able to point to them to figures like Kuan Yin. You know, Kuan Yin uh-huh. was a bodhisattva who began as a male monk who devoted themselves to the practice of compassion. And in the course of that development and that growth, actually became a goddess.
Oh, I don't think I mean, I knew about Kuan Yin as a goddess, but I don't think I knew her origin story. That's right. Okay. That's an interesting one.
So I'm able to connect you know, my LGBTQ clients with other ways of seeing the divine that help them then to draw a new connection. I also work a lot with clients who are interested in shamanic studies or magical studies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's simply because of my own background. You know,
right.
After I left that particular Christian church, I went through kind of a detox period, if you will. And then I trained in shamanic work for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That still informs part of what I do in my personal spiritual practices. But my personal practice really, you know, has become much more, you know, the Western ceremonial tradition.
Right.
So when I'm working with clients in those areas, you know, certainly I am even more prepared than others to give nudges and thoughts and tools. You know, my clients expect me to offer tools, which is different uh-huh. than saying, do this. You know, I bring them options. I bring them possibilities.
Can you give us an example of a tool that you might offer? I mean, I guess I sort of, I'm active on a Discord server, the Hermetic House of Life, where we get a lot of, you know, magicians and practitioners that will show up and being like, I'm having a problem. I think I might be cursed. I think I might blah, 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 blah. And so we'll, you know, we'll often tell them like, well, here are two easy things you can do, like practice banishing and do some divination and see if it's true. You know, I mean, again, we're not therapists either. And we're sort of like, you're asking in a magical context. This is the basic default to do. So I guess I'm sort of curious what tools you would use or what tools you would offer up.
So it's very situational, depending on what that client's interests and situation are. I have one client, for example, who every time we sit down for a session, the first thing we do is we each draw a tarot card.
Oh.
And we use those cards actually as jumping off points for what is talked about in the session.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps that client to open up about what's going on for them.
Mm-hmm.
I have advised people to, you know, to do different banishing rituals, but you know, there's many different approaches to that in world traditions. So we talk about the different possibilities that are out there. You know, some people are going to be comfortable doing lesser banishing ritual of pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
Others are just going to want a light sage.
Right.
For example. Well, I can talk about those options
mm-hmm.
and see what really resonates for that client. Sometimes I recommend books. You know, I recommended a book to somebody just this morning because they really wanted to connect with a particular spiritual figure. And I said, well, you know, here's a book that you might find useful.
Okay.
To give you some background there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, though, all I'm doing really is listening and giving people new ways of thinking into what they're already doing. So I have another client who is very actively working to combine his magical practice with his professional goals.
Okay.
And I have worked with him as he's laid out whole sets of rituals that he plans to do.
Interesting.
And he could do, you know, he is skilled. He can do these things on his own.
Uh-huh.
But it's still helpful to him to have somebody else that he can say, here's what I'm considering doing.
Huh. That is okay, that's cool. What about people who have like difficult spiritual goals? So for instance, you know, like in like the Western ceremonial tradition, there's like, you know, crossing the abyss or mm-hmm. contacting your HGA or things of that nature. Like, do you run into that also?
I've not run into anybody who wants my help contacting their HGA yet. But understand, I don't hold myself out as the expert on any spiritual
right.
tradition. I hold mm-hmm. myself out as somebody who has good familiarity. To be familiar with various world traditions and to offer some feedback and resources. So if I had a client, for example, who really wanted to focus on contacting, obtaining knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel,
mm-hmm.
I might actually refer them either to particular writings or even to certain people. you know, I think all of us have our little network of magicians that we deeply trust and think the world of. Mm-hmm. One of mine, for example, I think the world of Dr. Al Cummins. Mm-hmm. You know, I have personally benefited working with him. And there are some areas that I would feel very comfortable telling my client, you know what, if you really want specialized instruction on this, here's who I suggest you go to.
Oh, okay.
So they can go to somebody that is that holds themselves out as an expert in a particular area of magic, for example. But mm-hmm. we can still have the conversations of how that's working out for them.
Okay, that makes sense.
What their experience is looking like. How what they're feeling, what they're seeing, what they're knowing.
So then, I guess in a way, you are like almost providing kind of like additional feedback or additional support outside of, you know, like just keeping a magical journal or even, right. you know, if a practitioner is lucky, they might have a few other practitioners that they might be working with. But even then, mm-hmm. like maybe those people might be a little nuts or maybe they might be, it might be difficult to talk to them about stuff, sure. you know, because typically in groups like that, there might not be a good hierarchy that sure. that actually corresponds to like skill and knowledge.
Sure.
So you, sure. you could sort of like outside of that. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. But that said, you know, I am able to give a lot of tools. For example, I have, I work with a lot with clients with their dreams.
Okay.
And I have skills in doing that, you know, because of my Jungian training. But also, you know, some of my clients will say, look, I can't remember any of my dreams. Well, I have tools. I can say, here are some things that I've noticed work for myself and for other people.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I can give some very practical direction. But I also just realize where I can connect somebody who is even more useful to them on a particular piece of what they're doing.
Let's talk a little bit more about, like, when you're offering these tools, how does that differ from prescribing an imposed solution? Like, so for instance, when you give these tools, it's not sort of, you're not sort of saying like, this will fix your problem or this is going to, like, how do you differentiate that?
Well, again, everything that I'm saying, I'm offering in the context of, you could try this
mm-hmm.
or you may find this useful.
Okay.
I'm also, in many cases, working with somebody who already has a plan in place,
mm-hmm.
but wants to talk through that. We've all been in that place where we're thinking about something, and especially if it has a complexity to it, and we may need to just process it out loud. I know I'm personally a out loud processor.
Uh-huh.
So I think well by talking and speaking things. So, you know, going back to my client who's, you know, trying to advance his career, he knows what he's doing as a magician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has a good, solid background. But he still consults with me and talks with me as he works through some of the details.
Okay.
Of how he wants to carry things out. And I'm able to say, well, I wonder about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your correspondence there? Well, have you thought about this? Or, you know, I wonder what this would look like.
Okay.
At the same time, he can come to me with some of the outcomes as he processes mm-hmm. those. So I have another client who had an experience where they were out traveling and they had to return something to a store.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, and this person works very closely with Mercury and has a devotional practice to Pluto and Persephone.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, this clerk at a department store starts opening up to him about her sister who had been murdered.
Ooh.
And yeah, apparently the sister was expecting a child. And suffered a very, very violent death involving multiple gunshot wounds.
Oh.
And he came away really feeling like he needed to do something.
Okay.
You know, first of all, it was like, you know, why is this person telling me, you know, this is a clerk in a department store. You know, why do I have to hear this story?
Uh-huh.
But he really had a sense that he needed to do something. And so he's like, okay, wait. I've got a receipt that was printed out with the name of this teller who is having distress.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this gift card that she handed me. I've got this description of what happened. And so he put together a simple ritual. He's out traveling on the road simply mm-hmm. to offer some level of comfort.
Oh.
And spiritual peace to not only the deceased, but to the living sister.
Uh-huh. And probably to him or them
no doubt,
as well.
No doubt.
Yeah.
After that experience, he left his hotel room and he was going down the stairs just trying to get his steps in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he twice had this horrible sensation as if he was receiving gunshot wounds.
Whoa.
And, you know, it was very intense for him. And he needed to be able to share that story.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to be able to vocalize it somewhere. He needed a safe place to be heard. That client was able to reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't have to care about accuracy.
Right.
You know, I often differentiate between truth and accuracy. There was truth in his experience, whatever that truth looks like.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's his subjective experience
exactly.
that really matters
exactly.
in this case. Yeah.
So he needed to be able to give voice to that experience
mm-hmm.
as part of his own integration and processing. That's part of what I do.
That sounds like a really beautiful thing to be able to do. That's a really awesome service, actually.
It is. And when I'm able to make that kind of connection with a client
mm-hmm.
and really help them step into to deepening their experience, it is an opportunity for me to see the divine.
Yeah.
In whatever way the divine is being shown.
Uh-huh.
But I get to see what is happening in my client because I hold them as divine.
Uh-huh.
But also in the larger realm of psyche around my client that is also divine. So so it's a deeply sacred experience for me.
Do you end up sort of sometimes taking on or absorbing some of the difficulties or injuries, you know, psychic or spiritual injuries that your clients are experiencing? Like, does their potential trauma or whatever mm-hmm. like rub off on you?
So there is one of those places where the fact that I'm trained in some therapeutic techniques comes in handy.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I have my own spiritual practice. If I do not have my own spiritual practice, then I have no business trying to be a help to others in theirs.
Oh, that makes sense.
So, yes. So, I have my own practices of banishing. I have my own mm-hmm. offerings. I have my own connection with spirits so that I can process things. Also, similar to what therapists do, I have my own mentors. I have more experienced, even spiritual guides that I talk to sometimes
mm-hmm.
and say, wow, I had this client experience and I'm really feeling affected by it. Let's talk that through.
Oh, okay.
So that's part of the professional responsibility on my end.
Mm-hmm.
Is to make sure that I am holding those networks and those experiences. All the while, of course, keeping, you know, holding the confidentiality of my client. That's why, you know, you don't hear names. And the stories I've shared are stories that I have permission to share.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that's interesting. So I'm kind of wondering, like, you know, people who offer divination services, like, frequently when you're doing divination, you do kind of end up in a role where you're providing advice or perhaps dealing with people's difficulties. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are some diviners out there who do have some training and in therapy mm-hmm. and things like that. But they're also, I'd say probably most of them don't. I know I don't. And I do tarot readings for people and stuff. And do you think it's useful for diviners to sort of, I'm kind of thinking actually like there should be sort of a line where diviners like, hold on, this is getting a little bit too serious or too intense or too psychological or whatever. Maybe you should be talking to a spiritual guide mm-hmm. or something instead. Do you think that makes sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because again, you know, we all have our areas of skill. You know, I read tarot. Yes, I work with tarot extensively myself, but I don't have the same mm-hmm. skill as a reader that you do, for example, or say T. Susan Chang.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't pretend to. I don't go out and set up a table and do, you know, tarot readings for charge.
Right.
However, I have, again, resources to help either the client or sometimes the reader to work through some of those
well,
things.
Well, I was also thinking that. Yeah. Like, I mean, I can see how readers and diviners might need mm-hmm. spiritual guides to sort of talk through some of the experiences they may have with clients, huh?
Absolutely.
That totally Absolutely. Makes a lot of sense. So one of the other things that you had sort of mentioned in your notes when we were planning this was integration. Mm-hmm. And if I am pronouncing, you pointed out before we were recording that there are two different ways of pronouncing integral and integral, and that I was using the wrong one. So I don't know if there's another way to pronounce integration. It doesn't sound like it.
Integration is integration.
So what does that mean? Like, I noticed that the institute where you're a senior lecturer, an adjunct senior lecturer, deals with integral studies. And I am realizing now that I have no idea what integral studies are if it's not calculus.
Well, we're even because I couldn't begin to do calculus. So
okay, well,
I was lucky to make it through algebra. So integral studies, the school I teach at is unique in that our focus is psychology, but it is open to spiritual experience
mm-hmm.
and to the transpersonal.
Okay.
And again, go back to what I said earlier, a lot of therapists are not equipped to deal with that aspect of human experience.
Uh-huh.
So CIS offers an opportunity to allow those things into the conversation. We also at CIS have a great deal to do with justice and you know, being aware of marginalized populations, being aware of parts of the world where opportunities are mm-hmm. different and how we reach, you know, all of that sort of comes under that umbrella. But, you know, frankly, we sometimes have students who come in who have kind of pie in the sky spirituality ideas
uh-huh.
that are not necessarily grounded. And so part of what we do is to say, okay, that's great. Now let's tie it in with what we know about psyche,
mm-hmm.
what we know about human behavior. Where does this all come together? And that's integration.
Mm-hmm.
So as a spiritual guide, and I've referred to this a little bit earlier as well, I talk with people and clients about their experiences. And we talk about the meaning of those experiences and how that meaning carries into their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
So a client who has an experience may not know what to do with that experience.
Right. Okay.
But they feel it's important that they feel like it calls for a response, but they're not sure what that response is.
Uh-huh.
We get to explore that together.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, sometimes, like, especially with things like dreams, clients may need help even finding meaning in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I have clients that have a dream that seems to mean a great deal, but they're puzzled.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can talk about that dream, and I have tools to help them work through the, you know, potential meaning in that dream. But the next step of that is, how do I take that meaning and make it useful?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of what I do is very rubber meets the road.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like it.
I can tell you, I am, as much as, like I said, I welcome my clients where they're at and meet them where they're at. But I also, you know, have a pretty firm sense of spirituality needing to be grounded in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have one foot in the mystical, but have one foot in this reality as well.
Yeah, I have long felt like that was something that was lacking from a lot of occult practices mm-hmm. is the interaction or the intersection between sort of like the spirituality of, you know, magic or whatever and how that affects your either conduct in the world or your relationship with the world. And I think people don't think about that enough.
Yeah.
It's easy to read books and do rituals in your room and not think about how that translates into real life material.
Yeah. And you know, again, people have experiences that they simply don't quite know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
When I first began my training as a spiritual guide, I you know, kind of had a realization, and I got commented in the classes, I'm getting the sense that the most common question I'm ever going to hear as a spiritual guide is, am I crazy? And that has turned out to be true. Because people have intense experiences, and they come back and they say, wow, is there something wrong with me, or is this something meaningful?
Oh, man, that totally just makes me think of, you know, the conversation that I just had with Matt Dragonstone, which we were sort of talking about how in a world that, or in a culture that emphasizes the primacy and importance of empirical evidence and sort of material atheism, none of us are really prepared for the experience of the imaginal and the experience, the inner experience. You know, we are told so often that what happens in there doesn't mean anything or doesn't have any impact on like an objective world or anything like that, that we are not prepared for the fact that we don't get to live in an objective world.
Right. I mean, that's one thing
something
I've enjoyed hearing you on some podcasts recently and even in person recently, talking about Agrippa's approach to the imaginal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's something that resonates very strongly for me as a Jungian, because, you know, one of the things that Carl Jung said, image is psyche, and everything we encounter is image. You know, the words everything. I'm speaking
yeah.
are creating an image for you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would not understand them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your entire, everybody's interaction with the world around them is through image.
Right. And so we have to treat the imaginal as real. The imaginal mm-hmm. is a reality. Henry Corbin wrote a great deal about that, particularly from a Muslim perspective in that part of the world. We have to understand the imaginal as a reality of itself
mm-hmm.
and be prepared to interact with that reality.
Yeah, I really, really like that approach. So, and I also, like, I want to go back to that sort of, like, am I crazy question. I think we leapt very far ahead, but I think it's also important to kind of go back to something that you said at the beginning when you were explaining sort of like the difference between the Jungian and Freudian approach, which is that you treat people as if they are already whole.
Sure.
So you're not necessarily like, I mean, first of all, since you aren't diagnosing people, if somebody asks you if they're crazy, you're not, you know, going to pull out the DSM and be like, right. This is the page of crazy you are. But instead you're sort of looking at somebody and being like, you're a whole, complete creature. Your mm-hmm. psyche is there and it's whole. Like instead of jumping to crazy, let's look at like, how do you like, what's your approach?
Right. Yeah. Instead of looking for dysfunction, I look for function.
Okay.
So if a person is having intense nightmares, I'm not looking at that as a disorder. I'm looking at that as psyche attempting to communicate with that individual as a conscious being.
Okay.
And you know, the reality is, if we don't pick up on the subtle cues, we get stronger cues.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay. How the unconscious works. So, yes, we get these nightmares sometimes when we're not listening to, you know, the softer ways that psyche tries to communicate with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I'm not looking for what's wrong, what dysfunction is causing these nightmares. Instead, I'm saying, what do these dreams communicate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't even like to talk about bad dreams. I like to talk about dreams that are intense or dreams that were disturbing.
Yeah. You know, I'm a very intense dreamer or vivid dreamer or frequent dreamer. Like I have good dream recall and a lot of my dreams are weird and intense. But yeah, I don't know that I ever really view any of my dreams as nightmares or bad dreams. Mm-hmm. Some of them might be a little bit more intense, or some of them might be a little bit more uncomfortable, but I guess maybe I'm just lucky in that I don't have terrifying dreams or dreams that could be nightmares. Maybe someday I'll get to have nightmares too.
Or maybe you're just a good listener before it gets to that point.
That's possible. I definitely have some stories that I will share with you the next time we are drinking beer together, where you could be like, maybe you're not a good listener, Eric. okay, so, all right, I have a final question for you before we kind of wrap up this chapter of our conversation. I know this is going to sound like I'm just giving you an outlet to tell everybody that they all need to get spiritual guidance and that they should all come to you. But what I really want to ask is, like, how does a person know that it's time for them to seek spiritual guidance? Like, how would somebody at what point would somebody sort of say, like, oh, I need a guide now. I need spiritual guidance. What are some questions we can ask ourselves? Yeah.
So we can ask ourselves. There's a couple routes, really, where that happens. One is we can ask ourselves, where am I at spiritually right now? And where do I want to be? And what kind of progress am I making to where I want to be? Would I benefit from somebody who can help me to continually mm-hmm. make progress? Would I benefit from somebody who helps me keep myself accountable?
Right.
Would I benefit from okay. somebody that has an outside perspective on this.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, somebody may be going through intense spiritual experiences. And if that person is having those experiences and doesn't know what to make of them, if that person feels fearful or insecure about talking to their therapist
mm-hmm.
about those experiences, because, you know, talking about my client who had the gunshot experiences,
mm-hmm.
would not have felt comfortable telling his therapist about that.
Oh, yeah.
And he commented that he wouldn't feel comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, am I having experiences that I don't feel comfortable talking to my therapist about because they're weird, for lack of a better term. Right. You know, they're in that yeah. spiritual realm, and I don't know that my therapist is ready to hear and receive those things and help me through them.
Okay. Yeah.
There are many approaches. You know, my clients, I see both. I see clients who are having very intense experiences
mm-hmm.
and want somebody that's going to help give them a grounding to work through them. I also have clients who simply are saying, you know what? I really like what's going on for me spiritually, and I want to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, just like you might hire a coach
uh-huh.
if you wanted to improve your practice in business, or if you wanted to, you know, move forward in any other goal, a spiritual guide can help you to do that in terms of your spirituality mm-hmm. and your spiritual practice. And the thing to remember is everything I do is ultimately guided by the client, not by me.
Right. Okay.
I'm not here to tell the client what to do, and I'm not here to tell the client what to believe.
Uh-huh.
I'm here to help them where they're at with their set of values and beliefs, and help them
and their
move
goals.
Forward in a, yeah, and their goals, and help them move forward okay. in that in a way that is fulfilling for them.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I think that sounds like a really good philosophy to approach this with, and I think that those sound like good questions that practitioners and people with spiritual lives and no outlet for that sort of thing should be asking. Like, thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
Do you feel like there are any? I feel like now I'm being the therapist. Tell me, Nick, about your parents. No. do you feel like there are any big subjects around spiritual guidance that we haven't really covered that we probably should right now? Like, what else do the listeners need to know about this?
I think one area that is important to realize about spirituality in a broader way and how it relates to spiritual guidance is so much of the world sees spirituality as what we call an ascendant process. And, you know, of course, even in the Western mystery tradition, we talk about theurgy. We talk about drawing near to God.
Right.
What people don't always realize is that spirituality is also descendant. It is chthonic. It is dark.
Yeah.
I had an experience, and part of why I stepped away from the shamanic circle that I was involved in at one point. So I had an experience with a child who was exposed to some unknown substances through a romantic partner and ended up in the hospital.
Oh, no.
And I was sharing my anger. I didn't like the individual to begin with, but I was sharing my anger at this individual and what they had done. And somebody from this circle spoke up and said, "Oh, I'm sensing you're having a lot of fear and anger here. And, you know, you're such a wonderful practitioner. I'd hate to see you give in to that." And it was this idea that you had to be all love and light and that you only talked about the positive.
I hate that. Yeah. Yeah.
And my response to her, which of course was not the time to say that to me, but my response to her was, "Look, this is actually part of the reason I'm stepping away from the group." And I said, if spirit can't be with you when life is shit, then what good is it?
I totally agree with that. That, yeah.
You know, so we have to realize that it's not, spirituality is not all pretty. Sometimes it's gritty and dark and dirty.
Yeah.
And chthonic.
Right, right.
And as a cultist, guess what? We get to work a lot with the chthonic.
I mean, it's kind of important, right? Yeah. Like the idea of confronting your shadow and dealing with shadow work. I don't know if Jung is the first one who used those terms, but that kind of darkness is. Well, yeah. But I mean, that sort of like dealing with the darker side of spirituality has been around for ages. And it's something that, you know, I mean, you probably have to do it before you do the ascendant process.
In a lot of ways, And the other thing I would really kind of point out, I guess, is that, you know, particularly for those of us who are occultists, many of us are so interested in ancient practices. And whether I'm using ancient in thousands of years or a few hundred years, I love my grimoires.
Don't we all?
But you know what? We still have to learn to bridge those things with living in 2024.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
And so that also can be part of spiritual guidance is being able to say, okay, here are these ancient sources that I'm really drawn to. How am I going to translate this into my life in the current reality?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favorite hurdles with occult stuff, with ancient occult stuff. So yeah, that totally makes sense that it would, that there'd be a spiritual side to it too. Yeah, absolutely. That's a very important question. Well, this has been a really fascinating topic. It kind of makes me want to get a spiritual guide. So maybe we'll have to talk about that a little bit offline. Can you tell people where to find your website so that they can learn more about spiritual guidance and, you know, reach out to you if it's something that they feel like they might need to be going after?
Absolutely. My website is dancingancestors.com. All put together is one word, Dancing Ancestors. And you'll see a little more there about my background, a few things I've written. You'll also see services that I provide. And what I usually do is offer a short mini session with a person the first time so we can get acquainted and get a feel for whether we want to work together. And then beyond that, I actually offer, you know, 1 hour sessions. Generally, I have a particular rate for 1 hour sessions that are booked. I also really try to encourage clients to commit to a longer ongoing practice of deepening their spirituality. So for that reason, I give discount on a package of several sessions that are prepaid. But yeah, all the information is there and you're able to reach out to me. And yeah, I would love to be of service to more people in the occult community, honestly, because it's an area that certainly gives me a lot of fascination and interest.
It certainly is an area that presents a lot of obstacles and difficulties for the people involved in it. So I think that that's a really helpful service to offer. And so thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me talk about it today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for coming on and thanks for being a guest again. I'm sure we'll probably see you back on this show sometime in the future, maybe to talk about Paleolithic cave art.
Maybe.
I mean, it's a little outside my normal subject matter, but you know, it's on your list. Why can't it be on mine?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you so much, Eric.
This has been another episode of the Arnomancy Podcast. Thank you for joining me. I have been your host, Reverend Eric. You can find Arnomancy online at arnomancy.com, and you can subscribe to this podcast anywhere podcasts are found. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the Arnomancy Project for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/arnomancy.
Vanessa Irena, and I'm really excited to announce my new store, Sword and Scythe, where I'll be offering magical art, materia, and services beneath Mars and Saturn. You can visit the store at swordandscythe.com and be sure to sign up for the email list to receive early access to new releases.